a Canadian journalist infiltrates an international network of violent extremists.
They don't care who they maim or hurt or kill.
White supremacists who want to spark a race war and incite the collapse of society.
Embrace the chaos, and from its ashes, a new world shall arise. To victory, white man!
I'm Michelle Shepherd, and I'll take you inside this movement to learn where it came from and where it's headed next. White Hot Hate, available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast. The Icon of the Seas is the largest cruise ship in the world, the length of 4 football fields, 20 decks high. It has 7 pools, an ice rink, a concert venue, and many, many, many other amenities, casinos, restaurants, theaters. Passengers boarding the ship for its inaugural voyage earlier this year were impressed.
But everyone's at the bar. I like this area. It's probably going to be really cool at nighttime. This is insane. This is the world's largest cruise ship water park. It is massive. This is insane.
God, this is the adult-only area called the Hideaway.
Oh my God, there's swans in the...
Oh my God, you can rent those beds. You have to reserve it in the app. My God, this pool is amazing. We have a view of all the other ships in Miami today.
Because ours is so big, it juts out so much.
Yeah.
It was a dream come true for many of the thousands of passengers who boarded that day. For others, maybe not so much. The author Gary Steingart recently wrote about his experience on that ship for The Atlantic magazine in an article called "Crying Myself to Sleep on the Biggest Cruise Ship Ever, 7 Agonizing Nights Aboard the Icon of the Seas." Gary, good morning.
Good morning.
We'll get to the agonizing bits in a moment, but describe this ship. For people who haven't seen it, what does the Icon of the Seas look like?
It doesn't look like anything that feels man-made. It feels like something that's been designed by CGI and a Hollywood studio. It's just 20 decks full of neon. Everything is, every step you take, somebody pops up and offers you some kind of food. There's milkshakes, burgers, gyros. It's just, it feels like a wonderful hedonistic dream. But, underneath it all, it's a very empty place as well. But good Lord, it does boggle the mind the first time you see it.
You called it the Linda Lohman of cruise ships. Linda Lohman, of course, was in Death of a Salesman. And one of her great lines was, "Why does everybody need to conquer the world?"
Yes, and another line was, "Attention must be paid." And I think that that's very much about the, pertinent to the Icon of the Seas, because it really does sort of elbow its way past all the other ships, which are by definition smaller than it is. And the passengers are incredibly proud of being on the world's biggest ship. And the crew keeps telling them, "You're on the world's biggest ship. You're amazing." And people really buy into that.
You paid $19,000 for a suite on the world's biggest ship. What did that $19,000 get you?
Well, let me make a slight correction. The Atlantic magazine paid $19,000.
Somebody paid $19,000.
I would never in my wildest dream pay $19,000 for it. It looked like a room in the Marriott Hotel, which, and no knock against Marriott hotels. It was like a very decent room. Its most important feature was that it had sort of 2 bathrooms. But it was just me, so I didn't really need 2 bathrooms, but that was a nice feature. And I had a balcony looking out onto what was essentially a mall.
So for $19,000, you don't get a balcony that looks out onto the ocean?
No, I would imagine that would be, $29,000. I have no idea.
Goodness. But, okay. Yeah. You were traveling solo.
Yes.
You wore a t-shirt that was meant to be kind of an icebreaker for other people on the boat. What was the t-shirt?
Yeah. The t-shirt was a very popular t-shirt in downtown Manhattan, specifically in Little Italy, and it reads, "Daddy's Little Meatball." I don't think I'm meatball-shaped yet. I'm working up to it, but I thought it would be kind of funny. And yeah, people loved this t-shirt on land. But at sea, it didn't quite make any headway.
You didn't have the chance to use the meatball shirt as an icebreaker.
I mean, I would come up to people and thrust out my chest and hope for the best, but people just looked right past me. It's almost as if I didn't exist. To be fair, the right thing to wear on these cruises is some kind of handmade t-shirt attesting to a lifetime spent cruising. So, husband and wife have been cruising since 1928 or whatever. You know, those kinds of t-shirts really get people's attention and start conversations. Oh, you've been cruising since 1928? Wow, that's great. But Meatball did nothing for anybody.
You spend a lot of time as a travel writer.
I have. In my youth, I was a contributing editor to Travel and Leisure. So I saw most of the world on Travel and Leisure's dime, and it was probably the best experience and the best job I've ever had.
Had you ever been on a cruise ship before?
No. And it's funny because a lot of the travel magazines, you can't quite make fun of something, you know, if when you're doing a travel magazine article. So nobody wanted to send me on one of those because they realized I'd be making fun of it. So I never got offered one of those assignments. But The Atlantic, of course, isn't a travel magazine, so anything goes.
What kind of people did you meet? Meatball shirt aside, tell me about some of the people that you met on board.
Well, I started to butt myself into conversations since nobody really wanted to talk to me a la carte. So I would talk about, everyone was talking about football. There was a very big football contest going on in the United States, one about which I knew nothing. So I sometimes found myself just repeating the last thing somebody had said. Oh yeah, 20-yard line, scrimmage, right. But that was, so after a while, I just decided to become more proactive and started talking to people. And what everyone told me was how interesting everybody on this ship was, that the most interesting people go on cruise lines. So I kept trying to find these super interesting people. But everybody was really proud of themselves and saw themselves as kind of as adventurers, like they were adventurers on the high sea, almost like pirates or something. And Royal Caribbean is very smart because it keeps encouraging this through various slogans. It keeps telling its customers that instead of being in a giant mall adrift in the Caribbean, they're actually like, you know, Christopher Columbus or something, you know. So there's all these slogans like, it's not a vacation day spent, it's bragging rights earned, you know. What is that? But everyone seems to be believing in that quite a bit. There were a lot of conversations. I didn't want to talk politics because I thought maybe I wouldn't fit in politically with some of these people. But there was a lot of people would talk about the libertarian Ayn Rand and about how Biden didn't have a chance. People would also talk very – there was actually a gentleman from, I believe, Toronto or the area north of Toronto, I guess the Golden Horseshoe or something, mm-hmm. right? And he was talking about how he likes to discipline his children with violence. And I was like, "What? But you're Canadian. If you can't find a reasonable Canadian on this ship, then all is lost."
Tell me about status on the cruise ship. This is something that you learned, having not been on a cruise ship before. You learned a lot about status. You said that it mirrors the endless American fight for status.
Well, this was really interesting because the Atlantic had bought that $19,000 suite because it was all that was left. All the other cabins were gobbled up almost immediately. And so this entitled me to a special card that said I was a suite as opposed to just a regular passenger. But on top of me were people called the Pinnacles. And the Pinnacles had sailed for 700 nights, which means they'd spent almost 2 years at sea. I can't even, the mind boggles. So they had even more special privileges in the suite. So everything was kind of regimented. It's almost like having a rank in the Army or the Navy, I guess, where special places were reserved for each class. And there were all kinds of weird things. Like as a suite, I had special towel privileges. I didn't have to show my card to get a towel or something like that. So there were all kinds of weird fights breaking out about people who didn't have towel privileges. I don't know. It just goes on and on. Pinnacles were trying to sneak into suites, restaurants, suites. We're trying to overwhelm the Pinnacles. It's like some crazy pyramid scheme at sea. And people were very serious about this. And when people saw that my you have to have this like little pass, this little card, like a credit card to get into things, that they saw that mine wasn't purple like normal cards, but blue, signifying I was a suite. That people were very impressed by that.
There's the Pinnacles, and then there is the Golden Chalice. What is the Golden Chalice?
Oh boy, I was afraid you'd ask. Well, so the Icon of the Seas opened up its own boutique full of unbelievably gauche, jewelry and stuff like that called the Royal Bling. And the Royal Bling was offering this chalice. And the chalice, which cost $100,000 US, entitled the owner for free drinks on all Royal Caribbean cruises for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. So everybody was gaming out if, you know, this made sense because these were all insanely You know, everyone probably cruises at least once a year on that ship. So with $100,000, can I drink my way to, you know, to profits? And I don't mean to really cast aspersions, but a lot of the people on the ship did not look like they were going to earn that out. There were a lot of people who seemed to be experiencing all kinds of health issues, let's say. So this seems to be like another win. You know, the casino always wins, as they say, and I think Royal Caribbean's really going to win on this one, too.
I mean, there are a lot of people who really love going on cruises. This is their opportunity to go on a vacation. This is their opportunity to see the world and see the world, sure, from a giant boat, but you see the world. Do you understand why some people would think that this is a really good time?
Well, I would say that, first of all, I don't want to stand in the way of anyone having a good time. I love a good time. I have a good time most days. But my good time is, you know, I love good food, for example. The food in the Royal Caribbean was disgusting. It was like, even in the high-end restaurants, I was eating a steak. I had to almost ask if it was plant-based, that steak, because it was shiny. It was shiny meat. It made no sense. So all of the stuff that you had on the ship, granted, you know, there was a lot of whatever you wanted, but the stuff on land is so much better unless you really live, you know, unless your entire diet consists of Applebee's and Olive Garden and whatever, you know, Tim Hortons. So I don't quite understand that part. As for seeing the world, a lot of the people I met, we would dock in several Caribbean destinations. A lot of people I met wouldn't even get off the ship. You know, they said, we like it here. We can eat all we want. We can, you know, sit in the hot tub. We can lose thousands of dollars at the casino. And I've heard people lose 6,000 or more, you know. So I don't quite understand this see the world. You really are in a kind of mall with terrible food, bizarre entertainment. There was a ice skating tribute to the periodic table. This is like something Kim Jong-un would be like.
What does an ice skating tribute to the periodic table look like? Did you go and see it?
Oh, did I ever? Yeah. And by the way, people who have suite status have a special section reserved to us. It's like something out of the Colosseum or whatever. Yes, it was. I'm a writer, but words fail me. Mm-hmm. Each of the elements of the periodic table was presented with a very strange number where people would sort of skate to it and, you know, recreate what Borium. Sorry, I don't even know if borium is an element, but I was definitely bored, so borium should be an element. It was very strange, and it all played to, like, I worked on the show Succession for HBO, and like the theme song from Succession was one of the things that people ice skated to. It made no sense.
What does something like this just finally tell you about the moment that we are in? A ship like this, I mean, it's enormous. There will be a bigger one that comes after it, and a bigger one that comes after that, but they're packed to the gills, and people will spend not just $19,000 for a view of a mall, but much more than that to have a view of the sea. What does it tell you, do you think, about the moment that we're in?
Let me just say also that people will spend a lot less. I mean, you can get it probably, I think, a suite for like a cabin for $1,800. Yeah. And if you bring a family along, that actually is a lot less than, say, vacation in a nice hotel in Florida. I think what this says to me is that we're very atomized, and I'm going to speak chiefly of the United States, of whom most of the passengers were. We're a very atomized society. That ship is so large that you don't have the experience that you would, for example, of sitting at a table that's, you know, geared to bring people together. There's no seating like in the days of yore. Everyone does what they, you know, everyone kind of sticks to their own kind, families, groups of travelers. Everything's very atomized. People are very passive. You know, a lot of this, you just kind of sit there and the entertainment almost comes to you. There's no sense of adventure. There's no curiosity. It felt like a very incurious world. And maybe it replicated in some ways what I feel like when I turn on, you know, when I turn on my computer, when I turn on my laptop. There's not this sense of me being actually present in the world because this whole thing looked, as I said before, like a CGI simulation to begin with.
And yet, it's kind of precisely what a lot of people want.
Exactly.
Gary, good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Good to talk to you.
Gary Steingart is an author and travel writer. He wrote about the Icon of the Seas for The Atlantic magazine.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.